I told him, I said, you're going to have to get my attention, because I've done this a couple times where we finish the service and they say, sorry, we didn't get a recording of that because you didn't have it on. And I can't get this thing back on me. And I'll tell them, well, just wave me down, you know, make it look like you're bringing in a plane. I don't care what you got to do, but get my attention. So, sorry, that's my fault. This thing does not want to, there we go. All right. Everybody hear me okay now? Could you hear me okay before? That's what I kind of thought. It's the recordings for the website and those things that are kind of lost in that. So for those of you that are tuning in by radio or whatever at this point, I apologize for you missed the first part of that. All right, so what we find here is that God is working, and I think that he's working in us to do two things that we would, one, trust him, as we just sang in a song, only trust him. And then we would just simply do right. Now, many times we try to figure out what's the next stage. Well, just trust him and right where you are, do right. Make right decisions. It's kind of like the same song that we know, trust and obey. But just make right actions. And what we're going to see, I think, in David is, as I've titled tonight's message, Strategic Righteousness, that we're seeing him make some right actions in this. And so we looked last week at the time as David spared Saul's life for the second time, calling Saul the Lord's anointed. And after he had gotten a safe distance away, he called out to Saul and explained what he had just done and preserving his life again. And we read in verse 21 of the previous chapter, then Saul said, I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will harm you no more. Now the question is, do we believe that? Do we believe that Saul will not seek to harm him no more? Should David, after this has happened now at least two other occasions in which Saul has made promises to him that he would not harm him anymore, should David continue to believe him? Well, I don't believe so. As much as he may want to, he has not kept his promises to David. And so we find then in chapter 27, which we kind of just alluded to and jumped into a little bit last week, in the very beginning, it says, and David said in his heart, now I shall perish someday by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than I should speedily escape to the land of the Philistines, and Saul would despair of me and seek me anymore in any part of Israel, so I shall escape out of his hand. And so he arose and he went over with 600 men who were with him to Achish, the son of Maach, king of Gath. And so that's where he's at. And so David chooses to go over to Achish in the Philistines and to dwell there, and he's leery of trusting Saul's promises here. Now we're going to come back to what David is doing here in a moment, but I want to make a proposition to you, because the question comes to us as we're going to examine the following text: is David kind of going rogue again and stepping out on his, I'm going to trust myself, and he's relying on his own abilities and what he can do to preserve his life? Or is he truly trusting the Lord in this? As we're going to see him go into his time where he's going to live the next 16 months with the Philistines, is he really abandoning the faith and going off on his own? Or is he not? And I want to make a proposition to you that I don't believe that David has gone into self-preservation mode. I believe, as I've studied this afresh, because I've held a different side of this, and I'm going to say, the more I've studied this and meditated on this, I believe that David is in a position where he is pursuing strategic righteousness. He's not abandoned his faith. He's not trying to go into self-preservation mode. I believe that he is actually desiring to make right decisions and right actions as he patiently waits for God to move him. And so I see nothing in here that would lead me to other circumstances than that. So again, as we think about strategic righteousness, let me define that for a moment. Strategic, by strategic I mean purposeful, intentional, planning in the pursuit and trust of God. He's going to make intentional pursuit of God. And in righteousness, it's a zeal for doing what is good and right before God. Now, I realize that you may be saying, I'm not so sure that I hold that same position. It sounds like David has kind of done just like he did the last time when he fled from Saul and he went to Nob and then from Nob over to the Philistines and ended up having to feign craziness and madness. And he went out from there and wrote Psalm 27 and some of the other Psalms. But I think that David is in a different position. And I want to present to you as we go through this text that David is a wise, godly leader who carefully chooses his actions and his words and is cunning and crafty, as has been said about him. And he is going to, I think, in this situation, he's going to conceal his true identity. I think he's going to be hiding to some degree that he is, his true allegiance is still to Israel. His true allegiance is still to the anointed king, Saul, and he will do what is best as he follows God. Because you've got to ask yourself some questions. Have you ever seen David truly make Israel his enemy? Have you ever seen, in all the running that he's done, has he ever turned on the people of Israel? No, not once. Not even when the people of Keilah had turned and were going to, after he just rescued them, and then they turned on him and turned him over to Saul. He never went back and attacked the people of Keilah and struck them as he could have. Or what about the Ziphites, who twice notified Saul about David's whereabouts? And David could have easily gone back and said, that's it, twice you guys have turned your backs on me. I'm going to wipe you guys out. But not once do we see him pick up a sword and slay any Israelites. His allegiance, if you're looking at the text, has always been to God and his people. And really, even the king, even though the king has gone after him. And so, what I really think is happening, he's going into kind of spy mode. So this, I mentioned a couple weeks ago that when we were going to the Bible Museum in Washington, D.C., and we ended up getting all the way down there, and they end up canceling or closing that and all of the museums in Washington, D.C. because of wind, no less, that we ended up trying to find something to do, and the only thing we could find that was open was the Spy Museum. So I took the staff to the Spy Museum. Thank you. And but it was intriguing. It was really intriguing to look at the level in the United States and around the world of espionage and the secrecy and all that is done in the effort to protect and help and aid one's country. The fact of even living and having a whole different identity and a whole different life scheme that is concocted to look like you are just naturally living in a place. And yet, they have a whole different purpose. In fact, they say that Washington, D.C. has more spies per capita than any other city in the world. That there is more espionage. There is more secretism that is taking place. You'd be surprised on how many billions of dollars of U.S. funds are spent on spying and on espionage. Scores of billions of dollars out of our annual budget goes to spying. And so, but all of that is what I think is, as the intent of a spy is, I am going to, even though I'm in this other country and I'm looking like I'm showing allegiance here, I am going to make actions because my intent and purpose is my allegiance is actually over to here. Even though I look like I'm here, I'm over here. And I think that's exactly what David is doing, is he is pursuing strategic righteousness and he is going to be for Israel. So I know that's a lot to kind of start that. Now I'll get in the text and hopefully be able to demonstrate that. And so that's where I think David's at there. And here's a thought that I want us to kind of think about as we're going into this and kind of personalizing this as we consider how can I also be a man after God's own heart. That's been our pursuit with this study. I want to see why did God call him a man after God's own heart? What things can I put in my life that I can apply so that I too can be a faithful, loyal soldier of my king? And I think as we look at this, is that even when you aren't sure what God is doing, again, it goes back to trust him and simply do right. Simply do right. Make right actions, even the little things. I'm going to choose to pursue righteousness. And I'm going to follow my God. It sounds so simple, but strategic righteousness is key. So let's pray, and then we'll jump into the narrative. And I want to draw some personal application at the end. Father, I pray that you would guide our time together. Thank you for the text and just the excitement of this narrative, being able to follow the life of David in areas and situations that seem very intriguing. And Lord, as we see his hand and how he conducted himself in difficult times, wondering, God, where are you at? What are you doing? How long, O Lord? And yet, learning to trust you even in those moments, even those times when it seems like we just can't see what's around the bend. And Father, I pray you'd help us that we would learn from that and that we would pursue strategic righteousness as well. Thank you for this time together. In your name we pray. Amen. Well, let's start by looking at, as David is strategically raiding God's enemies in chapter number 27. And so David doesn't trust Saul. We saw that. He has to concern himself not only with his own life, but he has 600 men with him. And he has his two wives with him. And if we look further into chapter 30 in verses 1 through 3, we find that all of these 600 men, or at least most of these 600 men, also have wives and children. And so we're not talking about just 600 men. We're probably talking about 2,000 to 3,000 people that David is now consciously thinking about their protection. And he's analyzing, thinking, this is a dangerous situation in which Saul has repeatedly made promises and not withheld, and has withheld the living them out. And so he decides he's going to seek asylum with Achish, king of the Philistine city of Gath, in the area just west of the Judean hill country. And I'll show you a map here in a minute. And last time he had come to Achish for refuge, the situation, the circumstance was very different for two specific reasons. First of all, the first time, David was alone. He was on his own. He didn't have 600 soldiers with him who had a great reputation. He was on his own. Second thing, he had a strong reputation for the allegiance to Israel and being in the close inner circle. He was a captain in Saul's army. He was in the inner circle. He was the son of Saul's daughter. He was the son-in-law of Saul the king. And it would have been known by the Philistines, hey, this guy is on the inside over here. There's no way that we should trust him. But word has gotten around, and it is well known that Saul has been seeking David's life. That he's no longer on the ins, he's on the outs. And now he's got a group of men who are a separate group of men from Saul's men. And it looks like, from a Philistine perspective, that David has gone rogue, and David has his own army, his own militia that he's kind of going around with. So as he comes back to Achish this time, he's got a whole different circumstance that he can present himself with. And so he comes really as a vassal or a warlord with 600 warriors, saying, hey, I will come and I will fight for you, and I'll pay tribute to you. This is the way the situation would work. I'll pay tribute to you and I will fight for you if you'll give us refuge. You'll give us refuge, and we'll kind of be your hired grunt men. And we'll pay to you, and it'll be a good benefit. And Achish is pondering this, and he probably takes the philosophy that my enemy's enemy is my friend. My enemy, Saul, his enemy, David, is probably then my friend. And he welcomes David in. And you'll notice it there. When it says there then, where he went up to Achish, and David dwelt with Achish at Gath, he and his men, each with his household, and David with his two wives, Ahinoam the Jezreelite and Abigail the Carmelite, Nabal's wife. And it was told Saul that David had fled to Gath, so he sought him no more. Now notice that Saul stopped seeking after David. Why? Because he had made a promise that he would? No. Because David was now with the Philistines. David was right that Saul wasn't going to keep up his end of the bargain. And so David spends the next 16 months living up here. He first comes to Gath up in this region, but then we'll notice that in verses 8 to or in 5, in verse 5 there, he says to Achish, "If I have now found favor in your eyes, let them give me a place in some town of the country that I may dwell there. For why should your servant dwell in the royal city with you?" And so he goes and he carefully chooses his words. He makes it sound as if he's got allegiance. But he recognizes, probably for Achish it was difficult with an extra couple thousand people in Gath. But also David doesn't like being under the nose of Achish. He's got different ideas and a different purpose. And so he says, let me be out in the country area. Let me kind of, can I have a little place to live? And so Achish gives him Ziklag. Now there's two possible places. They're both about 25 miles from Gath. There's two of them that are possible tells today that haven't been unearthed. And when we say a tell is kind of a mounded place where they know a city was, and there's the ruins that was built up and destroyed, and maybe built up and destroyed, and that ruins of that city is there still to be, has not been unearthed by an archaeologist. No, that's not right either. You know what I mean. So these are two possible places that he's at. Now think about where David is at and what he's trying to accomplish here. And I think this is a perfect location where he wants to be far enough from the hubbub of the north up in Gath and where the other cities are at. He's away from Gaza. He also wants to be near Judah because he wants to still keep contact with these people of Judah and these different elders and leaders, because that's where his allegiance is. We're going to see him later on in chapter 30 give them gifts and give them things to them. But he also is in a place where he's in the south that he can go and he can fight against the enemies of God's people. The enemies that God had said, I want you to wipe them out. So he's really in a prime location. He says, great, Ziklag will be perfect. We'll stay down here. We'll be out of the reign of Saul, but we can still have a great impact. And so we read in verses 8 through 12 that he continues in this strategic righteousness as he's down there in this area. And we notice it says, and David and his men went up and raided the Geshurites, the Gizrites, and the Amalekites, or the Gerzites and the Amalekites, for those nations were the inhabitants of the land from of old. Now, as you think about this, they've been there for a long time. And if you look back in Deuteronomy 20 and in Joshua 13, they were commanded, the Israelites were commanded, go in and take out the Geshurites. Go and take out the Gezrites, and the Gerzites, and the Amalekites. Destroy them from the land. Remove them. But they didn't fulfill it. And so he is down there, and notice what he does. He starts going after them. And so those nations were there from of old, as you go to Shur, even as far as the land of Egypt. Whenever David attacked the land, he left neither man nor woman alive, but took away the sheep, the ox, and the donkeys, the camels, and the apparel, and returned and came to Achish. And then Achish would say, where have you made a raid today? And David would say, against the southern area of Judah, or against the southern area of the Jeremielites, or against the southern area of the Kenites. And David would save neither man nor woman alive to bring news to Gath, saying, lest they should inform on us, saying, thus David did. And so this was his pattern that he was doing. He was going and he was wiping out different southern areas, these people that God had commanded already to take out. He's now doing that. But when he comes back to pay his tribute to Achish, and Achish would say, where have you got all this stuff? Where's all this stuff coming from? Oh, we've been raiding down the southern areas of Judah. Now, is he lying? Not really, because this is promised land for Judah. This is the land God gave to them. And so he said, oh, we've been down there. Now, Achish hears what he wants to hear. And he hears that, oh, he's now, you know, fighting against his own people. Oh, this would be great. Obviously, now David is clearly and squarely on my side. And I've got his allegiance and we're good to go. But as you look at this, we recognize as he's doing this that it sounds like his allegiance is to, it's clearly obvious that his allegiance is to Israel and not to Achish. But notice verse 12, that Achish believed David, saying, he has made his people Israel utterly to abhor him. Therefore, he will be my servant forever. But if you think about what's happening, is David is pursuing strategic righteousness. He's concealing some of the things from Achish, and his allegiance is still squarely to Israel and to God's people. He's aiding and strengthening the southern area of Judah. He's weakening the Philistines by taking out their allies, and he's concealing all of that. So we see him strategically raiding God's enemies, and then we go from there, and we're going to see him strategically readying to battle God's enemies. And so notice over in chapter 28 here, as it says, now it happened in those days that the Philistines gathered their armies together for war to fight with Israel. And Achish said to David, You assuredly know that you will go out with me to battle, you and your men. And so David said to Achish, surely you know what your servant can do. And Achish said to David, therefore I will make you one of my chief guardians forever. Now, let's jump in here for a second and see what's going on. Yeah, David has served as a vassal, a warlord there for the last 16 months. Now war has broken out between Saul up in the northern area and the Philistines. And so the way that this was aligned was the Philistines were made up of five different kings who would each bring up their people up and they would fight together. And so Achish is the king of Gath, and you would have the king of Gaza and different areas and these confederate five cities, Gaza, Gath, Ashkelon, Ashdod, and Ekron. And so they're going to all gather up. And so Achish is gathering up his loyal people. And he says, all right, David, this is time for you to now come with me. They're probably thinking, the Philistines are probably thinking this is an appropriate time to fight against Israel. I mean, they're probably hearing that Saul's leadership and kingdom is tottering. They are obviously recognizing that people are defecting, coming to Philistia, and are leaving Israel, and they're thinking, man, they are weak over there. This is a great time to attack. And so they mount their forces. And so Achish tells David it's time for him to come and fight, as was expected. And David says, surely you know what your servant can do. Now, it's interesting. This is actually in the future tense here. So it would actually almost be better translated as this. You will see for yourself what your servant can do. Now, that would be true. Not that Achish was going to see loyalty to David or loyalty from David. He was going to see loyalty towards Israel from David. And so my expectation is David had a plan. You consider the close proximity he would have to the five Philistine kings. And he'd be on the inside. And he's thinking, maybe, Lord, you put me in this position for such a time as this, when this battle arises, and I can turn and I can take out the Philistine leaders. And so he's not at all claiming that he's going to be loyal. He says, you'll see. You'll see what your servant can do. Now, again, in my estimation, I'm interpreting this as you better watch your back. You better watch your back, Achish, because I'm not on your side. Now, Achish doesn't buy that. Achish hears what he wants to hear. And so he says to him, therefore, I will make you one of my chief guardians forever. The King James actually says it this way, therefore I will make thee keeper of mine head forever. Now think about the irony of this. Where was Goliath from? Gath. David had taken Goliath's head off and carried it out. And now the king of Gath is saying, I am going to make you the keeper of my head. You're going to be my guardian. David says, okay. Sure, I'm right on this. And so Achish, I just think, is just buying this hook, line, and sinker. And the irony here is interesting. Now, the rest of chapter 28 deals with Saul as he's preparing for battle. He seeks the witch of Endor. We're going to come back to that another day. Right now, I want to keep our focus on David. And so we're going to jump now from here to chapter 29. And we'll come back to Saul in that situation and in his death in chapter 31 on a future date here. But it says in chapter 29, as the narrative continues, then the Philistines gathered together all their armies at Aphek, and the Israelites encamped by a fountain which is in Jezreel, and the lords of the Philistines passed in review by hundreds and by thousands, but David and his men passed in review at the rear with Achish. So they kind of have almost this military parade as each of the five kings, as they bring their parade of soldiers with them. And in the rear there is Achish and his men with David. And the princes of the Philistines said, "What are these Hebrews doing here?" So these other kings, these other princes of these other places, they see David in this situation. They say, "Wait a minute, we're going to fight Israelites. Why do we have Israelites on this side of the fence? This doesn't make sense." And Achish is kind of taken aback. He says, "Is this not David, the servant of Saul, king of, the servant of Saul, king of Israel, who has been with me these days or these years? And to this day I have found no fault in him, since he defected to me." He says, "Hey, he's defected. I trust him." Achish is still just totally on board with David here. And so this, it takes him by surprise that they are questioning. But these other princes are wise. They could see that David could use as an opportunity. And they said that the princes of Philistines were angry with him. And so that the princes of the Philistines said to him, "Make this fellow return, that he may go back to the place which you have appointed for him. And do not let him go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he become our adversary. For with what could he reconcile himself, to his master, if not with the heads of these men? Is this not David of whom they sang to one another in dances, saying, 'Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s?'" Interesting how they have even the song word for word verbatim. And they recognize, hey, David could use this as an opportunity to turn on us, and he would take our heads now. He'd be using our heads to come back to Saul and say, "Hey, Saul, let me demonstrate my loyalty is to you. Here's the heads of these Philistine leaders. I am surely for you." And these Philistines say, "Wait a minute, this is what Saul or David could do. This is not a good situation." And so they are urging Achish to send him back. And the whole situation here is pretty amusing. And the fact is I think that they are probably right. I think there's probably a reality. This is probably part of David's plan that he would have done. He would have a great advantage to turn and take their heads off and cripple the Philistine army, no pun intended. And so at verse 6, we find Achish called David and said to him, "Surely as the Lord lives, you've been upright, and you're doing out, and you're going out, and you're coming in with me, and the army is good in my sight. For to this day I have not found evil in you since the day of your coming to me." So 16 months have gone by, and all these raids, and Achish has heard nothing about it. And therefore, but nevertheless, the Lord do not favor you. Therefore, return now, and go in peace, that you may not displease the lords of the Philistines. And then David says this in verse 8, "But what have I done? And to this day, what have you found in your servant as long as I have been with you, that I may not go and fight against the enemies of my lord the king?" Now, it really depends on what you're hearing here. And when you hear David say this, because as you study the life of David, who has he always called my lord the king? Saul. Now, and here's where it's debate. I'm not saying this is 100% clear or a open and closed or closed shut case here, but I think that David is really saying here that his loyalty again is to Saul, and he's saying, why are you not allowing me to go and fight? Because he wants to be there on the battlefield. He's got a purpose and a plan, and I have not seen in the life of David one instance where I would expect that he would go and fight against Israelites and take Israelites' lives. Not one time have we ever seen that even as a hint in his life. And so I think as he's gotten in this situation, I think he's got a plan that he would execute if possible. But again, Achish hears what he wants and has to send David back. And so they departed the next morning and come back to Ziklag. Now, I was hoping to jump into chapter 30. I'm seeing we're not going to have time to do that. Basically, as they're going to come back to Ziklag, they're going to find that things aren't good there. The Amalekites have turned and come back on them. And so I think we're going to actually pause here tonight, because I think this would take me more than the next 5 minutes to close this up. So let me draw some things back here. As we're looking at this, and the question I have is, do you see David's strategic righteousness? And I think you would even see it even more so in chapter 30, as he's gonna seek after God's direction. He's gonna make right decisions. And even at the end of chapter 30, we're gonna see him giving out gifts to the elders in Judah, the leaders down there of God's people, as he gives them of the spoils that they take from the Amalekites. And we're seeing God's hand has been on David's life throughout this process. And even a situation where he's saying, man, I don't trust Saul. I think Saul is still going to try to kill me. I don't know, God, when are you going to put me in the throne? When are you going to do this? I've been on the run for a long time. And he's trying to now care for several thousand people. But I see David saying, I don't know all the details of when or how, but I know my Lord. And the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. I trust him. And so I'm going to pursue doing right. I'm going to pursue honoring God. I'm going to pursue doing what God has actually already commanded back in Deuteronomy and in Joshua. And I'm going to pursue right, and I'm going to leave the results up to God. That he will exonerate me. He will place me where he wants me at the right time and the right way. I'm going to do right. I'm just going to trust him. And so as I think about that, in closing, I think about the words of a familiar hymn. And I just want to read, it's written by John Peters. I'm going to just read two parts of two stanzas here. I just keep trusting my Lord as I walk along. I just keep trusting my Lord, and he gives a song. Though the storm clouds darken the sky or the heavenly trail, I just keep trusting my Lord, and he will never fail. I just keep trusting my Lord in the narrow way. I just keep trusting my Lord as he leads each day. Though the road is weary at times, and I'm sad and blue, I just keep trusting my Lord, and he will see me through. Does that not sound like Psalm 13 that we started with? How long, O Lord? When are you going to do this? But I have trusted in your mercy. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation, and I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. In the times when you don't understand or know what God's doing, and you think, man, the script isn't lining out, don't ask necessarily to always see the script. Fix your eyes on the author of it. Look at him and trust him and just make right actions moment by moment, day by day, and let God take care of the rest of the details. We're so prone to want to take our control and control the details. But over and over again, if we're going to see what David is learning, how to be a man after God's own heart, we're learning that we really have to stop being close-handed and everything close to the chest, and saying, God, here's more of my life. That's what David's learning. God, I will give more and more to you because you're good, and I trust you. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the time around your word tonight and just this wonderful message or this wonderful narrative in the life of David. I'm going to see him walking through some difficult times, but saying, I will trust in your mercy. And God, we trust you. We know that that you are in control, you are sovereign. And I pray that you'd help us to continue molding and shaping like David, to become men and women after your own heart, as we choose moment by moment to do right. To do right in every situation and to trust you in it. Thank you for this time together tonight. In your name we pray. Amen.